This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by Prosper.com, America's marketplace for people-to-people loans. Prosper.com, where you can compete to bid on loans to fellow Americans.
The Fed throws out a bone.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Wall Street was pretty mopey yesterday after the Federal Reserve cut interest rates a quarter point instead of a half point. The Dow plunged 300 points. But this morning, the Fed announced a new program designed to get more cash flowing through the banking system. The hope is that banks will feel more comfortable about lending again. Central banks in other countries are also participating. The European Central Bank, the Bank of England, the Bank of Canada. So on Wall Street, yesterday is a distant memory. Wow, the Dow is up 200 points already to 13,633. The NASDAQ has gained 46. The S&P 500 is up 26 points. European shares are mostly higher after some early losses. In Tokyo today, the Nikkei lost 0.7%. There's even some positive news for the housing market this morning. Last week's mortgage applications hit their highest level since 2005. Jeremy Hobson has more.
A little context first. The 2.5% jump last week still puts applications well below their 2003 peak. And says MIT professor William Wheaton, a rise in applications doesn't mean more people are buying homes.
What it means probably is that a lot of the turmoil in financial mortgage markets is creating a need to restructure and refinance mortgages.
In fact, the survey says new purchases were up less than 2%, while refinancing rose more than 4%. Wheaton says that has a lot to do with interest rates being reset on those pesky adjustable rate mortgages.
So what we expect to see is not only a lot of foreclosures as the rate resets happen, but people trying to restructure their loan as well.
Wheaton expects the housing market conditions will get worse next year before they get better. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Hollywood just can't seem to win in China. Today in Beijing, the Commerce Secretary said China has started a ban on American movies in Chinese theaters. Apparently, China's upset about a case filed with the World Trade Organization. The U.S. accused China of failing to protect intellectual property. As in, you don't need to go to the theater because the new hit movie is already for sale on the street corner. By now, you'd think dial-up internet should be almost free, the technology's so old. But instead, AT&T plans to charge more for it. Adrian Hill reports from Chicago Public Radio.
Still connecting to the internet the old-fashioned way? The cost of dial-up internet service from AT&T will jump as much as 60% a month for customers in the 22 states it serves. Chris Combs is a spokesman for AT&T in Illinois.
We wanted to stay in line with some of our competition. You know, our dial-up rates are definitely competitive.
Forrester Telecom analyst Sally Cohen says the increase does put AT&T on the upper end of the dial-up cost spectrum, but it's not out of line. And she doesn't think the move signals an upward trend in dial-up costs at other companies.
I think that the premium tier of dial-up services, right around $20 or slightly over, will stay at that price point to be competitive with some of the lower-end DSL services in the same market.
Cohen says most AT&T dial-up customers, including those who don't have access to DSL, still have other lower-cost dial-up options. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
A guy walks into a Dunkin' Donuts in New Jersey, starts grabbing cash out of an open register. An employee sees this and has a choice, run away or do something. His first thought is, what if this winds up on YouTube? So he starts clubbing the robber with a coffee mug. He said he didn't want to seem like a wimp on the security video. The suspect runs away. The employee's name happens to be Dustin Hoffman. Dustin says he plans to post the video on YouTube as soon as possible. You're listening to The Morning Report for Wednesday, December 12th on Marketplace.org. California has set aside more than $3 billion for stem cell research. But a lot of that money is just sitting there waiting to be used. So why not loan out some of it to make more money? Today, a state subcommittee will take up that idea, calling it a biotech bank. Janet Babin reports from our innovations desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
You may think brilliant medical discoveries have no trouble getting funded. Nope. The ideas are usually risky. Venture capitalists can wait 5 years before investing. Robert Klein with the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine says that's when the state should step in. The proposal would loan out $750 million. Firms could pay the money back after investors jumped in. Some of the loans would default, but Klein says that's okay because
we will be getting interest from the other loans, and that interest income will offset the loss of capital on reasonable risks that didn't work.
But watchdog groups are wary. John Simpson's with the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights.
We're concerned that there be provisions to ensure affordable access to the research results to the people who are actually paying for it, the taxpayers of California.
Any loan recipient would have to be located in California. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
To Italy now, where truck drivers have been on a nationwide strike since Monday. Low pay and high taxes are the issues. The shutdown is costing the food industry more than $300 million a day. And it's kind of bringing life to a halt in Italy. Megan Williams has more from Rome.
Shoppers this morning in Rome are frustrated.
Che vedo, niente frutta, niente verdura, scaffali vuoti, vuoti.
Scaffali vuoti, empty shelves. That's what this shopper found in the produce section of his downtown supermarket. Outside, the streets are also a little empty, of cars. With truckers blocking major highways, gas is now in short supply. Handwritten signs saying finita, finished, cover most pumps. Police are now patrolling stations that still have gas left to help keep order in the long lineups. Most strikers are from small operations and are protesting what they call excessive tariffs and taxes, low pay, and lack of government support, especially compared to the highly subsidized rail system. As the strike rolls into its third day, Italians and its leaders are learning just where the truck stops. In Rome, I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
And now I will be a master of the obvious. College students have sex. Two-thirds of them say they've had sex in the last year. Many of them also had access to cut-rate birth control pills through college clinics. It's been a sweet deal for the drug companies, too. But a new twist in the law is changing that relationship. Caitlin Carroll reports.
It's dinner time, and students from the Claremont colleges file into a wood-paneled dining hall to load up their plates. But first, they face women with clipboards.
Hey, do you want to sign our petition about the rise in cost of birth control on college campuses?
These words are echoing across college campuses as prices for birth control pills skyrocket. Some students who are paying $5 or $10 a pack are now paying up to $50. That can be a lot of money for women like senior Angela Chen.
For someone else, $40 a month is not that much money, but when you kind of are only relying on your savings, $40 is actually a lot.
Pharmaceutical companies can give what are considered safety net clinics drugs at a discount. But college clinics, among others, lost their safety net status as part of a government spending law that took effect this year. Director of the American College Health Association, Mary Hoban, wants the discounts back.
We're simply asking for the ability for that pharmaceutical company to continue to offer a discount that they've been offering for a number of years.
About 17 years, to be exact. Congress tightened the safety net criteria because of concerns that drug companies were using the discounts to market products at big hospitals. When pills were cheap, clinics could easily mark up the price a few dollars and use that money for other services. Hoban says some clinics now face shortfalls of up to $150,000 a year.
These campuses either have to find another source of revenue or cut back on programs and services or increase the price for those programs and services.
At Pomona College in Claremont, students want school officials to help pay for their prescriptions. Student body president Elspeth Hilton says if they don't, students will go to clinics in poor neighborhoods where the pill is still cheap.
There are so many communities that are not very wealthy, but they have a very wealthy college within it. And to have those wealthier students taking away the resources at nearby clinics, I think, has a really big impact on the whole communities.
The House and Senate are considering measures that would give clinics their discounts back. Changes are expected by the end of the year. In Los Angeles, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
Did you know the Enron case is still going on? Well, it's more of a subplot to the scandal. It involves three British businessmen known as the NatWest Three. They just pled guilty in a U.S. federal court. A lot of people in Britain are not happy about this situation. Commentator David Frum has more on the three.
David Birmingham, Giles Darby, and Gary Mulgrewer constitute one of the most important irritants in the U.S.-UK relationship. Last month, these British businessmen pled guilty to one count each in a complicated corporate fraud case. They will be sentenced shortly. In American eyes, justice has been done. After all, the NatWest Three are accused of pocketing more than $7 million as their reward for helping senior Enron executives steal more than $12 million. But in Britain, the three look much more like victims of overbearing prosecutors and bloodthirsty laws. Prosecutors threatened the three with sentences of up to 35 years, longer than most murderers serve in Britain. First charged in 2002, the NatWest Three have lived more than 5 years under house arrest in Texas, before trial, which is why the guilty pleas are seen in Britain not as proof of guilt, but as the surrender of exhausted men. I'm not suggesting that the NatWest Three are innocent, but their case raises a larger issue. America punishes so-called white-collar crimes much more severely than any other nation, and much more severely than we did 2 decades ago. It's partly a political attempt to balance harsh penalties for violent crime. At the same time, American courts and prosecutors constantly seek to extend the reach of American criminal and tort law to companies around the world. There are times when American lawyers care about international opinion. The United States Supreme Court cited foreign disapproval as partial grounds for a 2005 opinion forbidding the execution of under 18 killers. So, question. If international disapproval matters in death penalty cases, why not for the rest of the U.S. legal system, beginning with white-collar crime cases that treat a 5-year house arrest as just an appetizer before the real punishment begins?
David Frum was a speechwriter for President Bush. He's now a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Share your thoughts at marketplace.org. We get an important economic number today: how much Americans are eating out. Here's Jeremy Hobson.
You'd think with all the talk of recession, people would be eating out less. Not so, says the National Restaurant Association. The group forecasts 4.5% growth next year. Hudson Reilly is the association's head of research.
20 years ago, it used to be what happened to the national economy happened to the restaurant industry. But the restaurant industry has truly become such an economic juggernaut that what happens to the industry actually affects the national economic infrastructure.
People who like to eat out tend not to give up that habit.
Tyler Cowan teaches economics at George Mason University.
The sector, in any case, has been moving toward lower price and greater convenience. And if economic times are getting worse, that's the direction customers will be going in.
Evidence of that trend can be found on the list of 2008's hottest food items, based on a survey of 1,200 chefs. Coming in at number one, bite-sized desserts. And at the bottom of the list, soda. I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too.
Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.